on 1116 SEN. We're first at the footy every Sunday morning.
From a tactical point of view, it was very smart, and you had very experienced players against two very inexperienced boys.
With full-on footy analysis.
Consistency and all that is fantastic, but at some time during your game, you have to stand up as a coach and say, I'm going to make this move. I'm going to change the course of the game from my position as a coach.
Welcome to Inside Football with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 455.
Good morning, football fans, and welcome to another brisk but generally fine Sunday morning in Melbourne. On a weekend when football, of course, has been very different. Different because it has been played in a framework that is unprecedented in the history of Australian rules football, certainly at the highest level, at AFL or previously at VFL level or any of the state leagues around this country. Of course, with the passing, and not just the passing, tragically, the murder of one of our coaches and somebody for whom so many people had an association with, and even fans and football fans of all ages, knowing Phil Walsh the player, knowing of Phil Walsh the coach, the assistant coach. It has been a restrained, but nevertheless, again, another weekend of football where, on the back of that magnificent gesture on Friday night, all teams are observing with unity and great respect for the passing of one of our own in this sport. I welcome Robert Shaw.
G'day, Mark. How are you?
I'm well, and I know, Robert, being in your 50s and having trod the same path, if not at the same clubs as Phil Walsh, as a player, assistant coach and senior coach, and as a former coach of the Adelaide Crows, that it would have been not just shocking news for you, but also news of somebody that you would have crossed paths with, and being a football person to your bootstraps as Phil was, somebody that you had so much in common with.
Well, yeah, I suppose in common is right. We're both in the strategy departments of our footy club over the majority of our careers, analysing games. So you'd always see him at the game, say hello and all that sort of thing. I was probably closer, you know, how's this, you know, young bloke that I worked with at Essendon, Dean Bailey, was his best mate. And we also lost Dean. So while I wasn't close to Philip or his family, there was always that association, because that's the football family. Always say hello. Fortunately, I did know him. But also I know people that are a lot closer to him than me, like, you know, the late Dean Bailey, Damien Hardwick, Choco Williams, these sort of blokes that worked with him at Port Adelaide. So I you know, and he just found out yesterday, my wife's away on holiday, school holiday. She's gone away, and she sort of texted me and said, oh, how do you feel? I said, oh, you know, pretty ordinary, just stunned like everybody else. And she informed me that she went through phys ed college with Meredith Walsh. So there's connections with this great person all through. And I dropped the grandsons off at daycare on the morning, and then my texts start. And I sat in the car and going, no, something's going on here. And so, yeah, that's my association. And just to, you know, I don't know how it affected you, Mark, but, you know, usually we sit and watch footy and make copious notes and come in here full of, you know, tactics and moves and all that sort of thing. I don't think I took a note, mate, and I'll be honest with you and the listeners. I just sat and watched footy. I watched the four games in a bit of a haze. You know, you're just sitting there going, and then you see what Nathan Buckley, Clarkson, Scotty Pendlebury and Luke Hodge organised pre-game, which is then overflowed into all the other games. It just, you know, no song, no celebration, fantastic responses from the people in the crowds in the minute silence, and also after the game, no cheering, no, you know, we won, you beauty. It was just very, very sad, but so well done, respectfully done by All In Sundry, which is the football family of all clubs.
And in keeping with the theme of the weekend, the restrained manner in which the games are being presented and the way the games are finishing with no theme song and no fanfare, we too, this morning, will do our normal work of going through games, but without our music at the beginning and presentations at the beginning. It seems to be fitting that we just step in time with the AFL. And today, actually, we're going to do something very different, a departure from our normal process, which is to look at one of the Saturday night games first. Whilst, of course, it's a very important win for the Bulldogs over Carlton, and we certainly will be looking at that game in depth.
Yep.
And likewise,
the Tigers?
The Tigers just scraping through against a very gallant GWS and a very important game for North Melbourne. Unfortunately, without the same happy ending that Richmond was able to give their supporters and scrape with a good one.
You know, last week, Mark, you and I debated, we disagreed. I thought Fremantle was one of their great wins. You said, no, Sydney's win. That's a great win. And that is a real
great...
For
the Tigers to get the job done when the day said no.
The day said no, which historically the Richmond fans are sitting there saying, the day said no, this is not our day. Behind for the whole day. I'll try and explain why it was one of Richmond's great wins.
And why it was one of North Melbourne's most disappointing games.
Demoralising.
Darren Crocker sitting in the box.
Yeah.
Not for the last time, but until in his role of holding the fort.
It may bring it to a head. So much discussion here, Mark. You know, we've had our moments with Richmond and we don't debate Essendon, but I guess all our listeners, the inconsistencies and what are North Melbourne? Yeah. Ranging from, you know, even just talking to Peaky before the show. Oh, I had him coming second, you know. Well, someone had him finishing 14th, so we never know. Maybe now, you know, to quote that old saying, that line in the sand, now people in and outside of North Melbourne have a clear indication of what has to be done and why it has to be done.
Having watched that game in full, I'm going to be very careful in the North Melbourne Geelong game not to...
GWS.
North Melbourne Gold Coast game.
Even I'm wrong.
I'm going to be very careful in that game not to... And, of course, it is the big story here in Melbourne as to what has happened to North Melbourne and the real possibility, even though the fixture gives them an opportunity to bounce back of them not making the eight. I'm going to be very careful to make sure that Gold Coast are given due credit and Gold Coast players right across the field are given their right whack, which is a big thumbs up, and not to downplay the return of Gary Ablett either. Wow. We sometimes take Gary Ablett for granted. It was a different Gary Ablett yesterday, only because he had a beard. Everything else was indicative of the man who warmed into the game. The first half was a slow burn.
They put a very, very, as defensive a tag as I've seen, and probably in the modern game, Mark, not the way it's going. Like Ben Jacobs held him to 9.
Yes, that's right.
Which is okay. Unfortunately for Ben, he's only had 1 kick and 6 handballs for the game. And we'll talk about the role of the tagger a little bit later, but it's not enough. You know, Gary's coming back from 9 weeks out. He had to be worked the other way.
Yeah, great point.
First, he had to be worked the other way, test him out. Whether he chased or not would have been, well, we don't know, but then exploded with 22 in the second half.
Yeah, it was a slow burn. It started with some good body work, strong over the ball. It then developed into some good clearance work. And by the end, those wonderful goals that have settled a few arguments at Metricon Stadium in the Gold Coast's early formative years came back. It's hard to say there were argument settlers when Dixon played so well, but know this, before we do the review of North Melbourne and Gold Coast, North Melbourne need a proper, tall, key defender. You know, once again, Thompson plus... You've got Thompson plus Hanson plus Tarrant plus Ferreira, whatever it is, you can't have 8/10 or 7/10 or 9/10 of four good defenders and hope that together they cobble together one effective, real good key backman. And Charlie Dixon could have had 22 opponents yesterday afternoon into last night, and he would have beaten a lot of them. But we look at that game later on. We take an early break, and when we come back, we're going to have a look at the game that means so much for the season, so much to two clubs. And I set the scene with this for you, Robert Shaw. I came on Friday night immediately after the game and said that I believe that that game entrenches the notion that Hawthorn, we do have to, of course, hope, and the signs are good, that Jared Ruffhead will be returning shortly, and there is nothing from that biopsy that needs us to concern for his short-term or long-term future. But that being the case, I believe Hawthorn on Friday night entrenched certainly my notion that Hawthorn is still the team to beat in 2015. They have the best team in 2015. But then I went out on a limb and I said Collingwood in 2015, not next year, has the best list in the AFL. I'll explain and expand on that further, but we don't normally go back to Friday night. It was an important game between two very meaningful teams. So when we return from the break, no fanfare or openers, straight into Collingwood Hawthorn from Friday night.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555. And Epworth. Better.
Welcome back to Inside Football, the full-on look at footy. And on this weekend, we're with restrained respect and unity. The AFL are marking the tragic passing of Philip Walsh. We too on Inside Football step in time, and none of our fanfare and glitz at the top of our match previews, simply looking at the games and looking at them as always in an in-depth manner, and as a departure from our normal procedures of looking at the Saturday night games first because of its importance in the scheme of things. We start with Hawthorn Collingwood from the MCG on Friday night, where the Hawks, 15-11, 101, defeated Collingwood, 12-19, 91. Collingwood were able to hit the front in that final quarter. It was a heck of a game of football, with Hawthorn, without Ruffhead and Frawley, exposed a little bit at both ends of the ground, and that was borne out by some dominant big man play by the Hawks. But once again, those goal-kicking yips came home to haunt Travis Cloke. And at the other end of the ground, without Ruffhead, and then without the ability to swing him on ball, there was also a gap that was not readily filled. Certainly Schoenmakers going up forward, Robert, I noted, competed extremely well, but on some occasions that was to the detriment of his own teammates who he was flying up against, and he worked hard, but he simply doesn't have the forward panache of a Ruffhead, and certainly he doesn't cast that sort of shadow, so he didn't require the extreme attention that a Ruffhead would require up forward. That being said, you can have Ruffhead out, you could say that Gunston's goal-kicking being off a little bit made him not as effective as normal, Bruce quieter than normal, but with a forward line as Hawthorn has, with so many, not talented players, but talented players of different types, it turned out to be an old favourite who we forget because maybe last season injury wore him down to a dull nub, how brilliant Cyril Rioli is. And he kicked five goals, but beyond that, did some great work, deft of hand, and it was a desperate piece of play late in the last quarter that settled the argument as he knocked the ball forward and kept it going Hawthorn's way that resulted in the Hawthorn goal that took them 9 points up and won the game. That being said, how on earth can Collingwood, and it wasn't indulge themselves, but stick to a game plan that saw them introduce two first gamers that, let's be fair, tried hard and showed great promise, Braden Maynard, another Sandringham Dragon, a player I really took a fancy to last year through the Sandringham Dragons and my involvement there, which is as sort of a, the club, I'm there to present it at club functions and best and fairest, etc. So yeah. I see plenty of highlights. And Maynard struck me as somebody that was not dissimilar to Angus Brayshaw in the way he attacked the ball. And you'd know more about young Braden and Angus and the comparisons between those two. But he's got a great deal of promise still. Tough ask, first game, Hawthorn Friday night. Same thing, Darcy Moore. Again, he showed in glimpses how worthwhile he's going to be with a fearless approach to the ball, eyes only for the pill. That being said, how can this side bring in two first gamers, put Jared Blair as the sub when really it screamed out that you've got to put maybe Braden as the sub? I mean, this was a hugely important game. Collingwood are striving for a spot in the eight. Every spot's important. Yet they stuck to their game plan, played two first gamers, and still gave Hawthorn an almighty fright. And I, in a moment, after your match review, I'll go through why I believe not for next year, not in the offing, not in prospect. They've already got the best list in the AFL. But first to the game and your take.
I agree with you, Mark. Obviously, Reed wasn't available again, Mark.
He'd played three quarters of dominant football in the VFL and just came off with a calf concern.
There we go. Well, there's no problem with playing. I thought it was brave. You know, people say over brave, but and he played them. He started more. You said he put Blair on the substitute. I didn't mind it at all. Maynard did some things that he's tough, and he's got that left foot that he's smart. He generally found his target very well and more competed. So I reckon it was just the whole package of what Collingwood is developing into. There's no problem with that. And, it is on paper unusual to make debutants against the best team in the competition, but I thought it was terrific. I was really excited to sit down and watch them play. Hawthorn always had them. Not at arm's length, you know, they went out to 2 to 3 goals a couple of times. Collingwood were very good in clearances. Collingwood were very good in the centre square and also in contested possession. Where Hawthorn got them, obviously, was their ball movement from turnovers, from Collingwood's turnovers, the Pies' inability to kick those critical goals again. I thought Cloke beat Lake but didn't finish his work. With 1.4, but he took 11 marks. He took Lake out of position. And I thought Collingwood hit the front when they went for a little bit of an unconventional forward line, which really had Hawthorn on the go because it meant that Hodge had to go back and play full back. Swan looked particularly dangerous. They tried to isolate him, put the big blokes up the ground, and that nearly pinched the game for them. It was a Rioli 50-50 ball win, a turnover, half a tackle in the middle of the ground that turned the ball over. So everyone's sort of focusing on his 5 goals. But once again, we come back to the theme that we said. You know, their fullback was out, okay. The Showmakers was there. And without the big roughhead, they once again showed this ability to kick a winning score, 15 goals in over 100 points, with Rioli, Bruce and Shields being their main goal kickers. They got a couple from Gunston and one from Showmakers, but this unpredictability of their forward line, that is going to give them a huge chance come... We know they're a huge chance, but it'll give them more than that because they're going to go eventually get the big blokes back there and have their normal structure that they have. They brought Spanger back in. You know, we thought he was gone. You know, the reports we got last week, Mark, that... you know, the ankle is gone, but he came in and got back into AFL football and did a very diligent role. So, but once again, this unpredictable, hard to hold Bruce. It's hard to hold. Shields is going wonderfully well. And not only does he do a run with job, he is a very, very smart goal kicker. And, of course, Rioli with space one-on-one against good opponents in Tuvi and these sort of blokes. Marley Williams, he was just a brilliant. So... you know, they've had Collingwood's measure easily. So, to me, Hawthorn, very, very good, very methodical. Just shows a little bit of where Collingwood are coming and where eventually they'll get to, I feel.
The game was played by Collingwood in brave fashion, I felt. They took the game on. They didn't compromise their own game plan, which I think says a lot about the faith that they have in the Collingwood, in the Nathan Buckley game plan. They stuck to their guns. Yeah. A lot of teams, and certainly a young team, which Collingwood still is, go into their shell a little bit against Hawthorn, fearful of being cut up by Foot. They took them on. They took them on at their own game and were able to take the game on down the middle. And what was really impressive for the Pies was, yes, Pendlebury was close to best on ground and Dane Swan influential when he went up forward. But how about the performances of Dugowie, who's only playing in his first season?
The Crisp, again.
Fantastic Crisp.
But they're all playing on each other, though. They Collingwood give them confidence to go through the midfield. He picked Crisp straight away and gave him a role. He's left Dugowie out once or twice, but brought him back as soon as he's got some form, half forward, a little bit in the midfield, kicked a couple of goals. So it's just a really good balance to the way they're doing. Can I just, Mark, can I have a comment from you in case, because you're obviously Dan in St Kilda, so yep. He's put his name on, so thanks, Dan. Cyril had 10 possessions and 4 tackles. His opponent had 21. He did not do enough. He lucky he plays for Hawthorn.
Well, gee. I mean, it's wrong. Sorry, Dan.
It's been the long story about Rioli has never been a 30-possession player, and people judge him on that. It's game influence.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, it's an opinion.
Yeah,
we're in the
problem, Dan.
We're in the opinion business, and everybody is entitled to their opinion, but sometimes you need to defer to the two coaches. And when you hear Nathan Buckley post-game talk about how damaging Cyril Rioli was and the difference between the two teams, and then Alistair Clarkson described it, being asked actually by a journalist, is that the best 10-possession game you've seen? And he said it wasn't just the possessions, it was the deft touches and then that all-important touch late in the game. Dan, don't be too beholden to statistics. They've been used, misused, abused by experts and fans alike. And sometimes I wonder, and not in your case, I'm sure you watched the game, but I'm not sure you watched the game, actually, given that SMS. But if you did watch the game, then I ask the question whether or not you watched it with a view to assessing players on what you saw or then racing straight back. And, Dan, you're not the only person that does it. As I say, professionals do it. Run straight back to your computer or pick up a paper and then analyse those statistics. And by the way, whoever you think got 21 possessions, whether it was
Tuvi
or Marley Williams or whoever took a turn on Cyril Rioli, they got beaten hands down, and Cyril Rioli was the difference.
Varco.
Cyril Rioli.
I think he's referring to Varco, Mark, at 21, but there were so many changeovers because of the way backlines reorganise. And this is where he gets away from them, Dan. It's very, very, very uncommon to be a lock-in. Rioli will go deep, he'll go up the ground, he'll swap over onto Marley Williams for 5 minutes, he'll go back to Varco. Definitely Tuvi had him at times, so, yeah, he's probably had 3 opponents, even if not 4 opponents, Mark.
Let me get on to the notion that in 2015 Collingwood have the best list and received an excellent SMS. Come on, fine, Eagles have a better forward line. They've got a great forward line, the Eagles, and I think the envy of every team in the competition. We'll have a better defence next year with McKenzie and Brown back in, and then McGovern can play swingman forward or back, spot on. But we are now talking next year, and this is from Matt in Perth. I'm talking about 2015, and that includes the assessment of players that can come back and play a role in 2015, because I'm not including Kiefer Thomas, for example, in Collingwood's list, and all indications now are, by the way, that they will be retained probably as rookies next year and return to the side in 2017. But here's why I mark them as the best list now. In fact, I'll ask you, Robert, who do you think, because Collingwood as the best list would raise eyebrows, and again, it's an opinion piece and up for discussion, and the reason I present it is maybe to compare it to other lists, but I would ask you just off the top of your head, who do you think has the best list?
Oh, I don't get into that sort of thing, Mark. I just
watch the game
in short term. Plough, go on, text in, Plough. We know you know you follow this with a passion. You can give us an indication. I can see the strength of the West Coast Eagles argument, definitely, given the return to form of some of players that sort of disappeared, Gaff has come back to really good form. It's a very strong point about them. I think the point out of everything that... what was his name, Mark?
Matt from Perth.
Matt from Perth. The McGovern factor is critical. You get good years out of Brown and McKenzie. That kid can go either end naturally.
They're playing the promo at the moment. I've described McGovern as the best key defender in the comp at the moment. Well, he's brilliant.
And you get the bloke back from injury, Jack Darling, that slots in five in a game where Melbourne hung in there for a long time and he was a significant difference.
Oh, they're good. He's a big man strength, but they are still looking to build that midfield, no question. Yo adds to the mix and they're all good points. This is how I read Collingwood. Remember Collingwood last night, on Friday night, drove Hawthorn right to the line. Out of their team who have been regulars this season, Brody Grundy, and had Brody played, probably Darcy Moore would not have, but he's a very important player and Brody may replace Witts or work with him.
Oh, the people off the SMS said Witts' is best game. They're really pleased with him.
Oh, look, and he played very well previously in the
game. They have used both of them well forward pocket, Mark. Both of them out of the forward pocket. They've done that before.
Played very well against Sanderlands, of course, in that narrow loss over at Subiaco. Tyson Goldsack didn't play on Friday night, and he is Collingwood's swingman and essential to their setup. Yet to appear for Collingwood is Levi Greenwood, but he's going to be playing shortly. Now, if you like the notion of Dane Swan playing forward more, then Levi Greenwood gives you a rock-solid midfielder to add to the crisp, and you know, Pendlebury now has crisp. But how well have they done? Dane Beam's a huge loss, wonderful player. But crisp has come in, DeGoey has come in, and in a circuitous way, so has Levi Greenwood on the back of that loss. And that was Heretia Lumumba as well. But, wow, doesn't that add to the mix? So Levi Greenwood comes in, allows Swan to play forward more.
I've got another name.
Ben Reid is very close to coming into the team. Another great option, back or forward. They've got two young players who haven't been unveiled yet that are very close to selection. Both of them may be their most highly rated youngsters in Nathan Freeman and Matthew Scharenberg.
Well, the point about, I'll raise this one at you, with Moore, they're quite prepared to put time into Moore against the best team in the competition. Scharenberg, you're absolutely right about him. Wait till you see him go. Has time run out for Reid?
Maybe not. I think because Jesse White remains spasmodic.
Oh, righto.
That there's always the option.
So you're comparing. I'm saying eventually Scharenberg and Moore should pass both of them.
Will you know them as young footballers? But they've got them to come, and they've got players like Seedsman and
he won the medal, dropped off, and got dropped. He's gone from the Norm Smith. Anzac Day medal to out. Pretty ruthless selection.
My word, a ruthless.
So they've got that. They've got the pressure too.
Let's go to Nick in Hillside.
Yeah, well,
Nick. Yep. G'day, Nick. Good morning to you.
Hi, boys.
And, of course, if you want to join, 9429 1116, give us a buzz. How are you, Nick?
Good, mate. Good. I just want to know, I'm a diehard Collingwood supporter, and I'm very happy with the way they're playing at the moment. But I just wanted to know about what you think of White and Fasolo's role, because I'm thinking you still got, like you said, Greenwood to come back in. There's Goldsack. There's Grundy. We've still got, like, Seedsman, Reid, and Dwyer, who's playing well in the VFL. Do you reckon they'll get dropped?
Fasolo? No. I think it'll be the whole basic theme about this discussion today has been team balance and unpredictability of forward lines with both teams. Mark's alluded to a very good point. If they can get Greenwood up and going strongly and continue the improvement to Goey and Crisp, this opens up a real opportunity for a 50-50 game for Swan and even Pendlebury. This could see Pendlebury and Swan changing as traditional ruck rovers going forward a lot more. So Fasolo gives them something different. He was inconsistent. They got him going playing half back. He went back. They've got him in. And I just like that unpredictability that he gives them. And he's attacking the ball well, attacking his marks, and he's an accurate kick. So I can see him being part of that forward six going ahead.
Oh, he is playing extremely well. Unfortunately, that accurate kicking let him down on Friday night and let the team down. He missed a set shot for goal, which is rare. He wrapped the inside of the post and then he had two snaps. All of this happened in that inaccurate third quarter for the Magpies, during which time they piled on a frustrating 2-9. Hawthorne remained resilient throughout and, of course, improve immeasurably with the return of Roughhead, which we hope, for so many reasons, is very, very soon. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we switch focus to yesterday afternoon, twilight, North Melbourne and the Gold Coast, and where, oh where, are the Kangaroos headed?
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555. And Epworth. Better.
Welcome back, 1116 SEN. Melbourne's home of football is Inside Football on a Sunday morning, and you might have just caught wind of Shorey and myself having a little chat about Adam Saad, because we are about to talk North Melbourne v Gold Coast. And yesterday, in the twilight time, and it was twilight zone for North Melbourne and many of their players, Gold Coast 19-11, 125, dismantled North Melbourne 10-10-70, and save for a little spurt just before half time, when North Melbourne were facing the prospect of going goalless in a half for the first time since 1979, that's 36 years ago, that was turned around with three very quick goals, two of them to Cunnington, and those three goals led, I guess, put them within 11 points at half time, Shorey, and the logician in all of us and those who look at football ladders and feel that they have a bit of a finger on the pulse of the season would have thought, okay, you've dodged a bullet here, North. We've just maybe been exposed to how Richmond slipped the noose against GWS, and you're going to do the same against Gold Coast. You finally woke up, and after half time, you'll come out, and Gold Coast, made up of a collection of players that are, for many people, Ablett and the others, are going to lay down, as has been the case for most of the year. Well, maybe half-time offered a little bit of encouragement to North supporters and some optimism, but that was snuffed out in the second half in no uncertain terms. They were saved by the final siren. That game, the longer it went, the more gaping the difference between the two teams' attitude, in many cases ability, and for some players in the North Melbourne lineup, that siren stopped a very, you know, a blazing look at their inadequacies, whether it was height in the back line, whether it was speed in the back line, whether it was application in the forward line. She's a nice thing to take potentially mark of the year, Lindsay, but it's less nice not to chase your opponent out of the back line and to see a young Tasmanian by the hard-to-pronounce name of Kolodziejczyk. Do you like a Saturday evening dinner, which is how you were served up by the end of the game? So the final siren served you well, Lindsay. Let me tell you, because the longer it went, the worse you looked.
No, it's fine, Mark, and maybe it's a reflection of the malaise that is there at this current stage, because their two half-back flankers, the boy you mentioned, Kolodziejczyk, and the one I'm going to mention,
Adam Saad.
Look, I've got Brayshaw and Cripps, quite clearly. But I tell you what, if you can give me a good
reason... rising star.
Yeah, if you can give me a really good reason... I know his team's been all over the place. They've been on the bottom. They haven't won. They've had issues on and off the field. They've had their captain. They've had everything go wrong with them. If this bloke was playing in a high-profile team, in a team that was winning, he has had an outstanding year. He may not have be as high profile and through those magnificent pathways as the Brayshaws and the Cripps and all this sort of thing. He was superb, Mark. I had a close look at him and Kolodziejczyk, and you're right, no chasing, no interest in chasing, no pressure from North Melbourne. They just streamed out. They used the ball, they ran. Kolodziejczyk is a kicker, So he kicks the ball, whereas the other bloke is brave and will take blokes on. And every now and again, he'll go for his eighth bounce and he'll bounce over his head and he'll make a blow. He was superb yesterday. So 4 marks to the recruiting of him from Coburg, coached by Peter German. And it's just a great, great story. Nichols again, your man Nichols, you know, up against the form man, the big fella in the centre square. He got back into defence. He helped out. I thought Rodney Ead had a very good game in the coaching. Of course he was helped by Adlett coming back and Swallow coming back. But let's not think that it's... look, it is about personnel at times, but this you alluded to the fact this was a right across the board, whether it be Stephen May at fullback or the big fella Charlie Dixon up full forward. And what was in the middle, you know, the hard work of Richard Telly. Ablett working hard early, you know, didn't have his timing, hadn't got his second win yet. Working hard, physically battered, but just kept working and working into the game. So the good thing about it was that, okay, and even Malcheski, you spoke about North getting those two goals through Cunnington. They didn't get it, Mark.
They were bad mistakes.
They were bad mistakes, but I'll tell you what.
Taking the game on, but they were blues.
He kept going. And I know he's an experienced player, and so he damn well should. But he did keep going, and he ended up having a pretty good game for them. Probably his best game for them after those two errors. So, mate, they were lucky to score at halftime. Their back line was well organised. They had good rebound. They were good around the contest. And I just think that this game is, you know, North people will be horrified with this, but, you know, it's finally broken. The dam's broken, and you can see what it is. Now, whether it's off field, whether it's on field, in a weird sort of way, you know, you've been saying, oh, are we top four, are we second, are we good enough? Maybe you know now, because right across the board, it was an inept display. It was extremely disappointing. You know, they had workers, they had tryers. I think Del Sano had 33. Yeah,
he had 33, and that was the problem. 33 possessions, of which 20 of them.
Did someone say 33% efficiency?
He is Nick Del Santo. It says 56% in the newspaper.
56.
Oh, some of his turnovers on chip kicks were terrible. That is so unlike Nick Del Santo. He worked hard to get to the contest. He used all of his nous. The ball got in his hands, but maybe the rust that comes with having not played for most of the season and then having a game back and then having to have a break, you can cut him some slack because he's normally much better by foot, and at least he got plenty of pill. I would be putting the spotlight on three or four of those players in no uncertain terms. One of them is Sean Attlee. Now, Sean Attlee was 3 or 4 years ago a very promising dasher out of the back line, and one-on-one contest with Sean Attlee last night showed him in not a brilliant light, to be honest. Jared Waite, we know, is an inconsistent performer, but in the absence of any forward line structure, and there was a real problem last night with North Melbourne, their forwards, they were precious last night. They behaved in a petulant manner in that first half. Did you see, on a couple of occasions, players going up to and almost instructing Magjack Dorr where to run and how to play? It was as though, oh, bloody hell, Magjack's out there. You know, that's not our normal structure. We like playing with Ben Brown. Magjack's too unpredictable. This doesn't suit me, said Lindsay. This doesn't suit me, said Jared Waite. Now, Magjack Dorr, that's his first game for the season. He was subbed. He didn't do a heck of a lot, and people might say that he shouldn't have been in the team, but he was in the team. And for North Melbourne players to be, and I saw this clearly, walking around sort of shaking their heads as Magjack flew with the flight of the ball and maybe disrupted a mark that was going Jared's way or what have you, just learn to live with it. He was picked in the team, and I had a real sense that they were off their tucker up forward because this wasn't what they had been training with or used to for most of the season. Well, suck it up, because there was a game you lost. Let's go to Mick in Q. G'day, Mick.
Morning, boys. Listen, just an observation, particularly North, but I think it's symptomatic, and I want your feedback on this. Very frustrating to see two things. One, they get rid of the ball, like automatically, give it to somebody who's under pressure. But second to that, they don't shepherd. They just don't. They give the ball up and just trot along next to it. And, like, give the ball up and give your teammate space. That's that attitude. Like, that's symptomatically part. But that is across the teams that lost this weekend. And when I went to the Collingwood game Friday night, let me tell you, the difference between Collingwood up and coming and those other teams is when they give the ball up, they give space to the person with the ball. And Pendlebury just takes that extra second of time. He is unbelievable, that guy. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, the point you make is good about, it comes back to also absorbing the tackle. Sometimes you've got to take the tackle. I was critical 2 weeks ago of the Tigers in their back line, just handballing the ball away, not being prepared to absorb physical contact, get it out, and you're right, it's symptomatic of North Melbourne.
If you want to see somebody take the tackle for their team, have a look at how Langford plays for Hawthorn. I mean, he just absorbs and absorbs and absorbs, and he's only a kid, so it doesn't mean that you have to have played 100 games of footy to do it.
And, Mick, sometimes you've got to do that. Every now and again you get caught holding the ball, but Langford's a good point of view. You just got to hit in, hit in, hit in, hit in, and eventually the game will open up for your teammates.
Good call, Mick. I want to go to Dom in Reservoir quickly. He's an ardent North fan and wants to talk about a man that needs to be talked about. Hello, Dom.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, it's been a tough week.
Yes.
But last night in front of the TV, I tried to watch it dispassionately, but I couldn't. And unfortunately, with Lindsay Finey, I spoke to you after the Essendon game that night. I was worried about him playing for free kicks and how the unintended consequences of all this would be him making himself the villain and other bad habits will creep in. Well, those bad habits the last 6 weeks have seen him only kick 5 goals, not get a free kick anymore. The umpire's turning not just against him but against the side because we've conceded 15 goals from free kicks in that 6-week block where we've only won 2 games. And Lindsay last night at the beginning of the third quarter when we clawed to within 11 points at half-time, we get the first centre clearance through Zeeble, half a minute into the quarter, and he doesn't go for a mark and just allows Adam Saad to mark up behind him uncontested and then gives away a 50 and then they get a 50. Adam Saad kicks it into the forward line and Charlie Dixon gets a soft free kick and it's probably shut the gate right there and then.
Yeah, great. Dom, you've nailed, actually, in a microcosm, exactly what was wrong with Lindsay Thomas last night, and that was he certainly flew and took a magnificent mark, but if it wasn't quite within his wheelhouse of preferred options, he just didn't put the effort in. Some good SMSs coming through. Aaron Hall was outstanding. Tuke Miller. I don't know many Tukes, but he's the best one I've ever seen play at AFL level. I know he's the only one, but he played very well last night. And I often go off at SMSs that are critical, but I'm glad that I got support in this one. Great pickup, fine. It was hard to watch all that instructing and magic. Let the bloke learn through playing. It just struck me as almost a outward showing by North Melbourne forwards last night as to why I'm not playing well. It's because of him. I'm going to tell him what to do. Have a look at your own games before you get stuck into Big Magjack playing his first game for the season. And by the way, he wasn't on the ground when you, in the last quarter, capitulated to the point of embarrassment. So you can't blame him for that, can you?
On 11:16 SEN, we're first at the footy every Sunday morning.
From a tactical point of view, it was very smart and he had very experienced players against two very inexperienced boys.
With full-on footy analysis.
Consistency and all that is fantastic. But at some time during your game, you have to stand up as a coach and say, I'm going to make this move. I'm going to change the course of the game from my position as a coach.
Welcome to Inside Football with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555.
Welcome back to Inside Football. Big day on 11:16 SEN. Straight from the studio here to Etihad Stadium, Essendon v St Kilda. And most people, especially with Carlisle not being available for the Bombers, marked that as a bit of a 50-50 clash. And of course, they went to the wire last time, these two teams, already having played this season. Andy Marr, Rob Waters to call the action with Scotty Lucas on special comments. Rowan Connolly will be there for the match game preview and Brett Thomas upon the boundary. And then to Domain Stadium, where Fremantle host Brisbane in a top v bottom clash. And top v bottom suggests what most people think will happen, but the obvious is not always at hand in this AFL season. That would be a great surprise if Brisbane were able to compete on level level footing with the Dockers. Tim Gossage is calling the action, and how about our special comments men in WA? You don't get better than former Freo captain Ben Allen and former West Coast champion Glenn Jakovich. What a wonderful team those three do make. John Ralph of the Herald Sun, 1116 SEN and Fox Footy, joins us every Sunday morning, and we love his input, though we hope that he's not mentioning a player for a team that we're barracking for, because it's generally a look at injuries and possible match review panel ramifications. So let's start off with, first of all, a player that didn't line up. And, of course, we talk about Jared Ruffhead, and there's two Ruffheads to talk about, Jared and Jordan. But what is the latest on Jared Ruffhead? Of course, he had that melanoma removed from his lip, and in a week of no other word to describe it, football tragedy, we have our fingers crossed that everything will be okay with the big Hawthorn spearhead.
Hello, boys. Good to be with you on a really tough couple of days for all of football. Look, certainly Hawthorn is optimistic that when those scans come back on Friday, that they will be all clear from a long-term perspective. You'll also have a series of body scans that will hopefully ensure that cancer, that melanoma on the lip, hasn't spread to any other part of his body. Now, the reason that he will still absolutely miss the next 2 weeks is that the club says he just can't afford to get another hit and stir up that part of his body. He does have a scar from his lip all the way down to his chin. And so he will miss those clashes against Fremantle and Sydney. But they believe that from then on in, that it will be plain sailing. A really nasty scare for a really well-loved player across the league.
And, of course, they are key matches when it comes to deciding those all-important top two positions, and not only the double chance, but home ground or home state advantage for those teams. And Hawthorn will have to do it with some sort of courage, as they did on Friday night against Collingwood. His cousin, Jordan Ruffhead, seemed to have a back soreness problem. And how serious is that?
Well, it was some sort of back spasm, and he did leave the ground after halftime, and he didn't come back on. Now, Luke Beveridge says that he's probably 50-50 for next week. He did seem in a lot of pain, and he's so important for them, but of course they still got the job done. Now, the hits kept coming from a defensive point of view. Dale Morris, now, he played the game out with what Luke Beveridge said was a crack in his jaw. Now, the fact that he could keep playing means that maybe he's some chance to play on with a bolt or some sort of plate in his jaw. That has happened before, or players have just missed 1 week. Now, Toby McLean is the one that will miss certainly a couple of months. Now, he's got a bad crack in that AC joint, and that tends to be a 6 or 8 weeker. So a lot of these young stars firing for the Bulldogs, but he won't be out there for a while.
Let's move on to the Blues, and of course their young gun and NAB rising star. Gee, hasn't been Norwich for a while. NAB rising star favourite Paddy Cripps late in the game suffered a leg injury, and there were questions as to what part of the leg and how serious it was.
Yeah, the club by the end of the game was saying that it was an ankle. Now, he didn't come back on from the 9-minute mark of the last term on. So, look, he seemed to be in real pain. He'll have scans today. You'd have to think there's a big chance to miss next week. I think that's Richmond on Friday night. You just don't want to try and push players through in their first and second years and jab them up. We saw his contender for the throne of the rising star, Angus Brayshaw, as well. Now, he came off with a shoulder injury and looked to be in real pain up in Darwin. Now, he tweeted out this morning that he has already had scans and there were no long-term difficulties there. So he thinks he's some chance to play next week. Andreas Everett, too, he came off with a knee injury at times. And again, scans this morning will ascertain how bad that is. But look, both of those players have been in fantastic form the last couple of weeks. So hopefully they're just little strains rather than anything more significant.
Let's move on to Angus Brayshaw, and he got crunched.
He got crunched, yeah. Look, the write-up was the neck, but he did say it was his shoulder. He just, I don't think he actually sublaxed that shoulder. He certainly was in real pain, and as he said today, he is quite sore. But again, from the scans, no structural damage. They obviously have good scanning places open 24/7 up there in Darwin. So he's had those scans, and he says that, as I say, he thinks he could be a chance to play next weekend against Essendon on Saturday afternoon.
On to a couple of match review looks for the Tigers. I certainly wouldn't have too many fears for the skipper, Trent Cotchin.
No, no doubt. No, look, it was a clumsy spoil, I suppose you could say, against Zach Williams. Now, he did have his arm outstretched, and I think it was an open hand. Now, obviously, the part of his of him that hit him was not with his arm. But I think it showed the intent to spoil the ball. Now, of course, he hit Zach Williams high. Yeah, maybe they might give him careless and low impact and he might get a fine, but I would think that he would play next week.
No, they gave him 50 metres.
Well, which is, I think that, yeah, that's the thing. That
it's well umpired.
In a free kick, but yeah. I think can be enough as a penalty.
Ivan Marić might be in more trouble.
Oh, no doubt. Look, it was a swinging arm to Steele, young Jack Steele. I think he's in trouble with that one. Now, was he trying to push off his rival ruckman? Did he see him? Was it intentional? That will be the thing that the match review panel will think of. But, look, I think there's a chance that could be something like medium impact and even intentional, which would get him 3 weeks down to two. So I think that maybe Sean Hampson might be floating around there. He's been waiting for his opportunity. It might be against his old side. I don't really know what form he's in the VFL, but I would think that he deserves to miss at least a week for that.
There's both coaches were asked about Toby Green's, was it a spit towards the direction of Anthony Moles? I think they were looking to downplay it, but I've got a feeling that they were downplaying a rather untoward bit of behaviour there by Toby.
Yeah, no doubt. And look, it's quite funny. These guys are very close mates. And look, on game day today, Leon Cameron had seen the incident for the first time. And as you say, he downplayed it at his post-match press conference. Look, it looked almost like there was a stomp as well from Toby Green. And then, of course, Miles got up, pushed him, and then the spit came. Look, he certainly didn't hit him with the spit, if that's what we want to get into the syntax of. But as Leon said today, if that was a deliberate thing, he'd be really disappointed in his player. Look, I think it's probably... Well, I don't even know how the match review looks at that, whether they just give him a warning. I couldn't see missing weeks, but it was a pretty ordinary act.
And Jay Schultz and that tackle... Look, the tackle on Ted Richards will be compared to Bryce Gibbs. It's not dissimilar, and I spoke about it with listeners at length after the game on Thursday night. It's what it is dangerous, and I just felt sick when I saw it, not knowing exactly how serious it was, and you really are in the hands of the gods when a player has you down to rights. It's certainly one the size of Jay Schultz when he, you know, mercilessly ragdolls you to the ground. So whatever happens in that incident, let's hope that there's a further discussion about getting that out of the game.
No, I agree. I couldn't agree more. Look, some of the commentators on Friday night called it a perfect tackle or a terrific tackle, and you can compare it to within an inch of its life against that tackle of a couple of weeks ago. As you say, though, the nub of this issue is that we don't want it in our game. So I think as a result, he'll get the same penalty. I think he'll get 3 weeks down to two, and I think it's appropriate. When you saw Jay Schultz with his hand up there calling out to the Sydney trainers, just desperate for those trainers to come across and help a player, I think that's something that we want to penalise, and I think he will be penalised.
And so I think that just about clears everything up. Of course, today the Adelaide Oval will open its gates to supporters to come and mark the passing of Phil Walsh with the siren sounding at 3:20 and a kick on the ground. It's been a different weekend of football, but of course the game goes on, and it goes on and has and always will as a sort of a beacon of not normality, of sort of where we want to be in times like this, and times like this that really remind us about some of the social problems that are out there and exactly sometimes how ugly the world can be.
We've all been, you know, thinking, is this the job that we want to be in? Should we be doing it this weekend? But you know what? I think the routine of football, with all the quirks and the little injuries and all of those in and out of form players, has sort of almost been reaffirming for us. So it's been good to work, because otherwise I think we would have just been sitting there thinking about the horrible circumstances. So, yeah, the show must go on in horrific circumstances.
Just before we finish, John, just a couple from mine. Was from your information, how close was the round to being let go?
No, I don't believe
you
it.
You don't, sir? Right.
I don't believe it ever was. You know, the sad reality is that it is also a business, and there is so much to, there are so many sponsors and corporates and even, you know, gate receipts that have to be compensated if not. But look, I just continue to say what a great that decision Geelong made. They could have kicked up a fuss, and I still think it might eventually cost them a finals campaign, but they just knew it was the right thing to do, and at least the likes of Bartel and Dawson Simpson and Smets could get some VFL time. So, yeah, look, even the Brownlow medal ramification, you know, was it the right decision? I don't know, but I just think in the end it was probably the fair one.
It's not going to be tested at this year's Brownlow medal. No player from either side has had a good enough season to possibly challenge Nat Fyfe or even some of the other players that
Matthew Prudis.
Yeah, that sit behind Nat Fyfe. It would have been interesting, though, had those teams played a game less and a Paddy Dangerfield or Joel Selwood had their normal seasons and been right up there in Brownlow voting.
Oh, no, I couldn't agree more. And look, a lot of people have said because Nathan Fyfe has been so far ahead, we've been able to make this decision. But I think that's all the AFL Commission could do and the AFL Executive. You take into account the circumstances of the weekend. Now, as I said yesterday on radio, imagine if Nathan Fyfe is suspended. But even then, you couldn't see that anyone from, as you say, Geelong or Adelaide is going to pip anyone. But, look, a tough decision, but I think the right one.
Just a quick one with Essendon. I guess form and one of their key players played against Williamstown yesterday in a big win to Williamstown. Myers left the field with a knee injury. Was that purely precautionary game time, or is there? Have you heard anything about an issue there? Sorry, mate.
No, not yet. So right. If he's got issues, he'll have a scan. He come back from that shoulder, hasn't he? So,
yeah.
I mean, he's one of the prime movers that they need in this side. And as you say, one of the reasons that they're probably a 50-50 proposition today.
Thanks, mate.
Just got a really good SMS from Sam in Blair Gowrie. And said, guys, wouldn't it be great if some of the Crows players or all of the Crows players turned up at Adelaide Oval today and just sort of quietly went on the field and had a kick with some of their fans? Because
exactly what I was thinking today. And I think there's a possibility of that because they'll be saying to themselves, do I go down and do what I love, kicking the footy at Adelaide Oval, or do I sit at home and sort of stew? So, yeah, all these things are going to be really emotional. And the caretaker coach too will be announced today. And whether that is David Noble or whether that's someone like Scott Camporelli, or even David Teague is someone who's really respected within that club. So they're going to be the tough decisions ahead for Adelaide.
I'd love if some of those Adelaide players went down today. The Adelaide, and I'm not talking about the football club, the town, the South Australian football community is feeling this acutely, and it's also sort of reflective of, you know, greater problems within society that is manifesting itself in different parts of the city. And wouldn't that help the healing process to have some of those players down there just in their civvy clothes and maybe a tracky dacks and runners and T-shirts, just having a kick with the other South Australians that want to make some sort of sense of the hard to explain. And I just want to ask you this, and I do this with respect, but I was suggesting yesterday in having a chat with a former AFL great that had Phil Walsh passed away from natural causes, I get a sense, and I feel that the game would have been played. It would have been, of course, tragic, but people can probably make sense, and when your time is up, your time is up of the passing of somebody from, say, a heart attack or a natural cause like that. But the circumstances of Phil's death are so devastating that it was impossible for the players to go on. Would you think that may have been the case?
Well, I think potentially. I think what Geelong did is they put themselves in Adelaide's position, and what the AFL did was they spoke to the players. And look, if the Adelaide players had said, we want to play for our deceased coach, but as you say, it was just so unprecedented and so shocking that it just added another layer of complexity. So the right decision was made, but as you say, maybe in different circumstances it may have been different.
Unprecedented, and we hope, we pray, never ever to be repeated again in any form for anybody associated with this game or indeed for anybody at all. John, we thank you this morning.
Cheers, boys. Thanks again.
We're going to take a break. When we return, and to regular listeners of Inside Football, in keeping with the respectful and less celebratory tones of AFL clubs this weekend who are not entering the ground with their football theme songs nor partaking in celebrations after the game, re those songs and other ways of celebrating, we come back without our normal start to a review, and that is with music and an opener, as we call it in the trade. So we'll come back straight and cold, but not dispassionate, and look at Richmond and how they secured 4 points on an afternoon that said in the past, this is where the Tigers falter. Well, they didn't, and Shorey will tell you how after the break.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 11:16 SEN. Inside Football, full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555. And Epworth, better.
Well, welcome back to Inside Football. Just one off the SMS. You can't be serious to suggest Dangerfield won't be up there in the Brownlow votes. Five is my tip, though. Very serious. He won't be up there at all, I wouldn't have thought at this stage. He's had some good games, but Adelaide haven't won enough and he hasn't been consistent enough to have a huge impression there, Shorey. I would agree
with that, Mark. I'm happy to disagree if I don't, but inconsistent, well-held at stages and hasn't had anything like the year of the Prittis and Fife and these sort of blokes. So.
Won't be. Still a good player. Don't worry. Geelong supporters. I mean Adelaide and Geelong supporters. Isn't that interesting as a notion that they're going to play the final game of the season? There'll be plenty of emotion in that game. And, of course, who knows what that game means in terms of the future of Paddy Dangerfield. But let's have a look at Richmond yesterday. They were at the MCG. Most people thought it was a fait accompli that they would secure the 4 points against GWS. And fate was set to dog the Tigers again, because sitting in the top eight, but within touching distance of a double chance and a really meaningful step forward in their pursuit of the Holy Grail, at three-quarter time, with GWS not just only leading by 15 points, but really having grabbed the ascendancy in a game of football that Richmond just couldn't get a foothold in. The conditions didn't seem to suit their tall forwards. The desperation of their players was, I'm not saying that they weren't desperate for the ball, but it seemed as though every 50-50 ball that was dived upon by both teams either popped out GWS's way, or in some cases, just they were... I should give the final score, of course, was 10-18 to 10-9, 78 to 69. The Tigers finding a way, and I'll call it a way in the last quarter, to finally connect with the scoreboard. Am I right in saying, and I just felt that for the afternoon, GWS had the sort of bigger bodies for the condition. I kept scratching my head and saying, is this right? Is this the junior partner sort of now playing in the tough, hard conditions in the middle of winter, outdoors at the MCG, coming of age and showing that it's not... It's I think from here on in between the years for GWS, because I don't think they want four physically at all.
No, they were good, Mark. And look, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and I love this game. Because it's been highlighted Richmond's performances against Fremantle and Sydney in particular, but they will look back wherever they finish, and they should finish pretty close to the top four. They will look back and say that was a good win. They were behind for over three quarters. GWS, as you've alluded to, out hustled them, were physically stronger, outnumbered them, had more numbers around the ball and had a lot more energy than them. So they're off the bit a little bit. There's no doubt about that. But that was purely because of the likes of Green, Treloar, Scheel, Scully played well. They were really an harassing team that went into a forward line that looked pretty dangerous. They did their homework. They initially had Palmer going to Hooley to negate his run. That move changed after a while, but Palmer kicked three goals from opportunist conversion, so that was a good effort by them. As I said, they led for three quarters. They had two dominant half-back flanks. One was a natural in Shaw off half-back. He played a terrific game. And also an interesting move to put Griffin there permanently. He was a constant threat. And between Griffin and Shaw, they really stabilised that back line. It might be one of the reasons he went back there is because of the Davis and Pat Full situation, the loss of their key defenders. I reckon it was a really good game for the backline players. Like in the last quarter, you know, Richmond were able to manufacture either Chaplin or Hawley loose. GWS had a loose man back. I thought it suited Richmond. And when you look at the fact that Chaplin had 8 and Hawley had 11 in the last quarter, it shows you a couple of things. They were able to organise their defence and have the key players that they wanted free. So that was Chaplin and Hawley. And also the fact that GWS was still coming, Mark, because the ball was up there a little bit. So I really liked the way both back lines held up. They did a great job on McCarthy. He was well held to 2 kicks. Put a lot of pressure on Cameron versus Rance, which was a great battle. Their midfield was more than competitive against a very good Richmond midfield that again showed the improvement or the development of the maturity of Cochin and Martin, that they can not panic, they can lift, and they can get their side over the line. So I reckon it was, 10 goals, 18 to 10, 9, not a fancy scoreboard. The conditions were difficult. And maybe Richmond preferred the drier track, but that'd be taking... But it came down to little things. I've mentioned Chaplin and Hawley. And the other thing was, when it's so close, the influence... We can see the influence of the sub. And I'm not being critical of Liam Cameron at all, but they have chosen to make Stewart a tall, a backup tall, which they probably needed, given the deficiencies back and maybe some extra support in the ruck. And if something went wrong with the ruck or up forward, they probably needed that. But in a game that was so close and needed to come from behind victory, McIntosh's 9 possessions in the last quarter as the sub was significant. So all these little things made it a really interesting game. You can't go past big goals. You know, we've talked about goal kicking a fair bit here. Jack Riewoldt's big goal. That was a great shot for goal, as was Edwards' stunning centre clearance.
That was huge, wasn't it? That was a pivotal time in the game. I think.
Yeah.
I think the straw that was set to break the camel's back, had that gone the other way, might have seen Richmond in a whole world of hurt today, answering questions as to why can you beat the big boys and not come out and do the right thing when you're playing against the GWS. But he stood up Edwards, and he has for just about the whole season in various guises, whether it's as a small forward, whether it's competing in the air, or whether it's as a clearance player. He's to the point of underrated, not discussed in reverent enough terms, I think. Edwards, he's a wonderful player.
Well, it's interesting. I was thinking that while I'm just going through my notes here. Every team has got their best players and their profile players, and, you know, Ablett and all those sort of blokes. There's another group of players that under the category, it's a long heading, Mark, if they were out of the side, who would you really miss?
But they certainly
I know people will say Jack Riewoldt and Ivan Maric, but I reckon Edwards is a real hole, a real hole. And if you go through all your favourite, all your sides, you know, who you barrack for, there'd be a player like an Edwards, you'd say, geez, I hope he doesn't miss the game. And I bet you he's not your best player, but he's one of your most important players, and he's developing into a fine, consistent AFL player. There's no doubt about that. Just on the, we've had a number of SMSs on, and folks, we don't cover it because we don't involve ourselves, but there were a couple of issues that went against GWS that, you know, I think it was the tackle. Was it Miles on the far wing? I reckon he was turned around 4 times.
Yeah, given an opportunity.
He gave him plenty of opportunities. So, look, that's just, is it part of the game or should they have been better in that? Probably should have been better in a few of those decisions. But as I said, a lot to like about this, because you would have had 40,000 Richmond supporters going, we've seen it before, here we go again. You know, we get up, we beat Sydney, we beat Fremantle, we come back, we're flat. GWS have got players out. And they're the wins, folks, that you absolutely need. So that's why I rank it right up there. And another sign of maturity from the Tigers. Very good leadership. I think I'm really impressed with the way Martin has become a consistent midfielder. Yeah, he can still go forward and do the spectacular for you and kick the one-out goal. But his work rate, he's starting to learn about midfield work rate, second and third running efforts, pushing to the other side of the ground. He's really starting to develop as a good midfielder for the Richmond Football Club, not just a spasmodic, brilliant sort of player.
Let's go to Adrian in Lower Templestowe. Ooh. Are you there, Aid?
I am indeed. Good morning, guys.
You're going to disagree with me, mate, a bit.
No, I would disagree with... you mentioned one of the players, was it not Chaplin?
Hooley?
He's been fantastic. But actually, when he was playing loose Chaplin, I think when Cameron scored a goal, he just went right under that ball. And I thought, what the hell are you doing, son, mate? And he just picked up the ball, turned around and snapped it. Fair enough. That was Rance's player, but I don't know what happened.
No, nor do I, but I must say the intercepts by Chaplin in the last quarter was absolutely significant, and it creates the old debate about do you man up the loose man? Keep going, mate.
Yeah, our big guns obviously play well and saved us, but it's always the same players that do play well one week and go cold. Now, I'm speaking of Tyrone Vickery. Maybe I'm a bit harsh on him, but I thought he could have been a bit better. He only got half the possessions of what he did the week before, and he would have been a great help to Jack up forward.
Yeah, look, the conditions weren't great, Adrian. I want to ask you a tough question, and it's going to be tough. Chris Newman?
Look, I'm not... he's been out, and look, whether he's not match fit or maybe he's on his last legs, I don't seem to really pick on him that much. Why would you say Chris Newman?
Well, because you're pushing for a spot in the top four, and you're right. He's potentially playing his last season, and he has missed much of the year, but this is not about giving Chris Newman the fitting end to his career that he deserves. The former captain, of course, deserves to be in the side as he heads into what seems to be his final days of league football, but it's not about doing the right thing by Chris, unfortunately. It's about doing the right thing by the team. And is he a member of that 22, your best 22?
I tell you what, I would rather have him floating around the back line than Grimes at the moment. I don't think Grimes has done enough, and I think Newman can have his spot any time.
Okay, that's one Richmond supporter's look. I think they play very different roles, and I like Grimes as a spoiler. He doesn't get a lot of the pill, but he is a spoiler. Chris Newman, of course, will hopefully get more of the ball because it's with ball in hand that Chris is most effective. Still a penetrating kick, and they like his ability to clear the lines by boot rather than having it run out by Bashar Hooley. A break, and when we return, the Doggies and the Blues was a very similar scoreline to Bulldogs and St Kilda, but a less pulsating game, and we'll explain why after the break.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football, full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555. And Epworth, better.
Interesting SMS just received, and it shows that supporters, and we know this by going to the football week in, week out, or even on a semi-regular basis, that you can sit next to supporters of the same team and completely have diametrically opposed...
with the person on the other side of the row.
Absolutely. Yeah. Diametrically opposed views of players within the team. And this one from Louis in Hawthorne. That guy is definitely not a Richmond supporter. Must be watching the wrong colours. Grimes? 8? You imbecile. He's the reason why our defence is improved so much. Uneducated fool. Well, pretty pointed missive.
There's a couple of Richmond members going head-to-head, Mark, with each other.
I wouldn't be that strident in my response to Adrian, but I like Grimes. And you can't have all that dash out of the back line. Rance is brilliant, but he rolls the dice on many occasions, and he does so to great advantage for the yellow and black.
And another one, Mark?
Bashar, I'm saying, they've got a lot of players that
Hooley's polarised Richmond supporters, doesn't he?
They take the game on out of the back line. You need somebody back there sort of adding a bit of steel or fibre to the diet, as they say. Yeah. And I think Grimes, in a non-spectacular way, is often the spoiler, the guy that gets the ball over the boundary line. He plays the percentages very well, does Dylan Grimes, and I'd have him in any back line every day of the week, because he's the sort of bloke come finals time that when the whips are cracking, you don't need to worry about doing something too silly.
Would prefer Newman in September than Menadue, Corey Ellis, Arnott, Day, etc. Not taking anything away from those players. That's from Anonymous.
Yeah, fair enough. And that's
why... There's the third Richmond supporter.
And Newman is an absolute pro for parts of the game yesterday. And somebody
I thought he was pretty
out.
Important the last... Those,
towards the end of the game, absolutely. He used all his nous and was there when the whips were cracking. But there were times yesterday where I had to be reminded that Chris Newman was actually playing. And he still provides... for Richmond, his best service with ball in hand and on the boot. So I'm sure that he will work his way through the end of the season to best effect. And it'd just be great if that consistency and that match hardness can come quickly over the next couple of weeks, say against the Blues and the Saints. Another player like Del Santo, who probably wasn't well served by the mid-season break. For some players, it comes as a welcome respite and a real chance to recharge the batteries. For other guys returning from injury, like a Newman or Del Santo, and certainly older footballers, it probably comes at the wrong time as they're building that fitness base and getting the form, not only fitness in the legs, but form between the ears in terms of confidence in going for the ball. In Del Santo's case, it was using the ball. In Chris's case, probably getting a bit more of it. Let's have a look at the Doggies and the Blues. And Carlton last night continued under John Barker to play younger players. And I'll tell you what, they really didn't, for mine, look like winning that game in the last quarter. It would have been a bit of theft if the Doggies sort of won the arm wrestle in the third quarter. But full credit to Carlton, especially with Everett off and then Cripps having to come off. And you are now relying on players that hadn't been given a look in throughout the season. A couple of Blaines and various other youngsters. Some seemingly despised cast-offs or never-to-play-agains like Dennis Armfield. And they remained committed to the cause. But in the end, the Bulldogs, I think, through the four-quarter efforts of Kobe Stevens, who I thought was fantastic, Liam Picken. And there are a lot of junk possessions in the last quarter. Don't worry about those, as Bulldogs played some pretty effective keepings off. But Jackson McRae and a midfield that is consistent without being brilliant. I guess Bontempelli was supposed to add the brilliance, but it's been a tougher second year for Marcus. So without absolute brilliance, they ground out a good win.
Oh, no doubt about that. Just... briefly, you know, you look at both sides. McLean, Daniel, I'll talk about him. Fletcher Roberts, Hamling, Honeychurch, Redpath. Then you've got Graham, Cripps, Buckley, Holman, Johnson, Bokhurst, Wiley. So it was really good thumbnail sketch of the list management and the young players coming through. Both clubs aren't frightened to play them, particularly the Bulldogs, who are in a very strong position heading into the second half of the year. They've got themselves going very nicely. The Blues have been documented, and Johnny Barker has quite rightly just gone, I'm going to play these blokes and give them the opportunity. But, Mark, I guess, in the paper it refers to a new cult hero is born. We probably say...
The half a sub.
Yeah. Cover the half a sub. The sub was 23 centimetres and 38 kilos off. Caleb Daniel on, and... was the highest-ranking player in the second half of the game. 14 possessions, not as many as the influential Liam Picken, but he, whatever the rankings are, they've given number one second half to the smallest bloke in AFL football.
I was so bullish about him, having watched all of his highlights in the under-18 championships from last season, and I know that the Saints had him on their radar as a possible rookie selection. Of course, the first rookie pick went to Jack Sinclair, so that may well never have happened. But Caleb Daniel If you want to see a highlight package of an underage footballer, you can still see what he did last year in the under-18 champs and how he won the commentators over and how they fell in love with him. He's a dynamite little footballer with a tremendous peripheral vision for the kick, whether it's a long kick, he can kick a goal, he can pick out a player. It's not easy playing this big man's game, and it's getting bigger by the minute. John Nicholls rucked for Carlton and was named in the football team of the century as a 182, 184 maybe centimetre ruckman. That is now considered a small midfielder. So poor old Caleb Daniel getting around at sub-Brent Harvey height is always going to... He's going to be a cult classic stroke, a curio and a point of interest, but do not ever think that this bloke cannot play great footy. He's a little ripper. Let's go to Luke in Essendon. G'day, Luke.
How you going, Finey?
Very well, thanks.
Good morning.
I rang up last week asking for Blaine Bocas to come into the team.
You got him in?
He got him in, and he dishes up a performance like that. It was very disappointing. And no intensity. I know he's an outside player, but to run at, 64%, no metres gain, he was in the minuses. Just has no hard edge about him. Just, very disappointing. And then you look at Caleb Daniel, who comes on, halfway through the game, and he gets more touches and makes an impact in kicking the goal. It's quite frustrating.
You know what, Luke? When you expose younger players that haven't had an opportunity, and I know Blaine Bocas, I've got to be careful because there's two Blaines playing for Carlton, but when you pick a player as a mature number one draft pick, as he was out of the Sandville, I guess there's going to be extra pressure on him. But what's happened to Carlton under John Barker is everybody's going to be given a look-see that can play in the seniors, and that is absolutely the right thing to do. So if Bocas doesn't work, you can contend yourself and be very comfortable in the notion that Nick Graham does.
Yeah, well, Graham played very well last night. He was our highest Supercoach getter, and he had 20-odd touches, so he was impressive. And it was good to see Holman. Well, in effect, if you look at Holman, he had 11 touches, but he had 7 tackles. And between him and Bocas is, Holman was prepared to put his body on the line.
No, well, good call. Really good call.
It comes down to makeup and personality. Obviously, a bloke like Nick Graham on doesn't appear to have the natural talent, but he is a ferocious competitor. And now it's up to the coaches to add that element to Bocas's game. He had 11 possessions, you're quite right. No metres gained. Disposal effectiveness was average. But that's up to the coaches, and that's one of the reasons he is playing. They've got to extract it from him. They know he can be outside, and outside players are important in this game. There's no doubt about that. But he also has to develop that ferocity and the competitive spirit like a Graham has got.
Thanks a lot for the call,
Luke. Thanks, Luke.
So we move on to the final game that was played.
Is that it, Mark? Well done, Dogs. Another win.
Yeah, it was a good win. And
Duel of the day, just a couple of quick ones. Duel of the day was a ripper between Tui and Stringer.
Oh, Tui played well, didn't he?
Yeah, it was a good duel.
Has Jake Stringer got a touch ahead of himself?
He's a
beauty. He's an absolute ripper, but he's played
confidently.
He's out there.
He's out there. Yeah. Anyway,
he had his colours lowered, I would have thought. Do you agree with that?
Well, 3 goals in a 9-point game. So many one-on-ones between him and Tui. One by Tui. As I said, I wanted to make mention. Sometimes we talk about these one-on-one battles. We don't see them. That was a ripper.
Melbourne took on West Coast at TIO Stadium last night, and
apparently,
I watched the. Unfortunately, I watched the second half of the game, and for Melbourne supporters, that game has gone the way of a couple of other games this year, and I think it might have happened at Alice Springs, and it certainly did. I think against Port Adelaide at Alice Springs, where they just this is a side that remember had a stirring win against Geelong. They are the ADD of football teams. They've got attention deficit disorder because they absolutely, in a game where they were competing manfully against the West Coast Eagles, and I know the West Coast Eagles are big and powerful, but they really went into their shell and without a whimper sort of snuck off TIO Stadium by the end of the game and would have, with their heads ducked, got onto the aeroplane and come home. It's must be galling for Paul Ruse not to be able to get similar efforts on a regular basis out of his team. Half-time, the score was 7-8 to 5-5. It ended
up they're in the game.
16-18 to 9 goals 6. And Jack Darling Gee, they've got some options, don't they? They've got some big man options, and are we getting to the point of Lillian Thompson again? If Tomo doesn't get you, then... If Lily doesn't get you, then Tomo must.
And they can still win without two of them having big games, because they've got a bloke called Lecrae there.
That's correct. And they can certainly move forward with McGovern, as was pointed out, next season. A number of players, of course, would need to come back into that back line, maybe two. But they are there with McKenzie and Brown injured. For Melbourne, they... I mean, Dawes, it's interesting. I know he's an injury-interrupted footballer, but I wonder whether they need to structure a forward line moving forward without reliance on somebody that plays irregularly and contributes irregularly. I know that Dawes, when he came to Melbourne, looked like great leadership material, but I don't know whether he's going to provide them with the sort of steel and backbone that they require going forwards. We're off to the break, and when we come back, set ourselves for the long handball from Swan Street all the way to Etihad Stadium.